I'm Cynthia Whitcomb. I'm a playwright, screenwriter, television writer, teacher of writing, and president of Willamette Writers in Oregon.
At this stage in your career, do you prefer to go as, consider yourself as a playwright or a screenwriter?
A playwright.
A playwright first.
Yeah, because it's what I'm doing now.
Yeah. And have you ever dabbled in short stories, novels, and other forms
I started, well, of course, in high school, we all wrote short stories and poems, but and then I wrote a couple of novels in college.
Uh-huh.
And won a couple of awards. Or
yeah.
Did okay. And sent them out to one publisher each, and when they were rejected, just moved on to
right.
other things.
So right.
I had patience.
Right.
But also, I was just still learning to write. But yeah, I wrote a couple novels in the beginning.
Uh-huh. Do you ever think of going back to that medium?
I did one in about 98 or so. I wrote one more novel and got a really great agent who sent it to everyone. And it was a time when it was really hard to sell a novel. And
yeah.
I got a lot of really nice rejection letters. And so, but that took a year.
Yeah.
And I make my living doing this. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's just too much time. And it's so much more satisfying to get plays that then audiences can see them. And
right.
You can make somewhat of a living and still sometimes make a living.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Always have the possibility of it. And then just, I just love it. I love the whole theater thing. I'm a theater nerd sort of from birth. So it's my zone. It's my thing.
Wait, what's the first play you remember?
Seeing?
Yeah.
Well, when I was a kid, my mom found out, before I was 10, so I was 7, 8 in that area. My mom found out there was an outdoor college theater in Redlands called the Redlands Bowl. And we didn't have money to go to a theater, but she would take us and we'd sit in the park and watch the dress rehearsals because it was just outdoors in a big bowl. So we saw in dress rehearsal Midsummer Night's Dream, Pirates of Penzance, The Mikado. Loved that stuff. So we'd see the actors running around. We'd see them stop and fix things. Oh, it was just even more magical in a performance because, you know, the girls would run by us in their petticoats and stuff and we could see the costumes up close. It was just very thrilling.
You grew up in Redlands?
I grew up in, for the first 10 years, in Bloomington, California, a very little town. My granddaddy was a preacher in a little church there. And my dad was a Sunday school superintendent and an elementary school principal. My mom taught kindergarten. Huh. But until I was 10, then I moved to Pasadena.
Ah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I really grew up in Pasadena from 10 through college.
When did you feel the calling about writing?
Well, my grandmother was a poet. She went to Occidental College in the 20s. My great-grandfather was an evangelist who was very well-known. Both my granddaddies were preachers. So they're always literary type of people. But my grandmother was a poet, and every year she belonged to a club called Pasadena Writers Club, which was really mostly little old ladies, but they had a luncheon every year. And she would take us at luncheon. My sister and I, Wendy and I, would get to go to this, you know, gloves and hats sort of ladies' luncheon in Pasadena at a hotel or someplace. And it was like all the people in the club had been published.
Ah.
So there was this aura of, ooh, you know,
the mystique.
The really cool thing was people who'd been writers that had been published. And when we were little, we would send our poems and stuff off to the newspaper, and there was a $2 prize every week, and we won that a couple of times, different ones of us, by writing little poems or whatever. So the bug was early on, was planted early on, and I'd written a little staple the papers together book in third grade or something, which had great acclaim among my peers.
So what was your first published piece, do you remember?
You mean not counting the...
No,
Sunday
first stuff published piece, the one where you sort of your chest filled with pride.
Well, I'm not so much a published person as a produced person. So for me, I started writing screenplays in college and really intensely 3 years after college and sold my first thing at 25 and it took about 3 or 4 years to get something produced. I sold a lot of stuff. I was making a pretty good living. But my first thing was produced in 1980.
Ah.
So I was 29. And it was called Leave Them Laughing. And
oh, yeah.
The first one ever produced, it starred Mickey Rooney, Ann Jackson, William Wyndham, Fort Garfield, Elisha Cook Jr., it was directed by Jackie Cooper. I mean, it was so thrilling to me to see it made. It just really infatuated me with television. It was my first thing I'd ever written for television. They made it immediately, and I'd sold a lot of things to film, and they didn't shoot them. They just bought them. So that was getting a little frustrating. So that was my biggest first I'm legitimate, this is real thrill.
Yeah.
In terms of production.
Tell me, do you remember what it was like to see your first production piece that you had written, where you must have had in mind the pictures, and then all of a sudden somebody else takes it and makes their pictures?
Well, I had written it imagining Jack Lemmon, and I got Mickey Rooney. It does change, but you're just so thrilled that they're actually, that they build the rooms, that everything that you imagined is real. It was very thrilling the first day of shooting. I was there every day they shot. I was at dailies. I was just completely in it, you know.
Yeah.
And my producer, who's still a lifelong friend, it was his first produce thing, too. So we did four other things together because we had that lucky first hit together. And we did some other pretty cool stuff, too. But the first day of photography, we were shooting, and a really gorgeous guy comes up to me and says, everyone's talking about what a great script it is, so I just want to congratulate you. And he shook my hand, and he said, my name's Mark Harmon, and I'm an actor. And I'm like, this is a good job. I like my job. So it was fun. And then seeing the film was great. Seeing the first cut together, you know, premiere showing at the Directors Guild was thrilling. Seeing it to television with my whole family and all my friends. We had a big party, and it was about a clown, so we had a big circus party, you know. The whole thing was thrilling.
What year was that?
1980.
Is there any time you can remember proudly telling somebody, a complete stranger, yeah, I'm a scriptwriter, or I'm a writer?
Well, I think I told you the other day, the first time I said I'm a writer was when I was a waitress. It was during college, and I just really didn't want people to think I was a waitress, they'd ask me something about being a waitress, I'd say, no, I just do this for a living, I'm actually a writer. So, it helped.
That's great.
It helped not get discouraging. I worked at Bob's Big Boy.
Bob's
Big Boy in Pasadena.
Bob's Big Boy in Pasadena.
Burgers.
Well, do you ever wonder how many other writers have their start there?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people started as waiters. But Sam Shepard even wrote about that particular Bob's Big Boy in one of his things.
Ah.
Yeah. So I was able to just take my pension and do what I wanted to do. So I started writing plays very seriously in 2007. Now I've written 8 plays in the last 4 years. Read 800. And because I started training myself by reading one play every day to shift out of the film zone into the playwriting zone.
Is there any playwright that stands above all others?
Well, Shakespeare, of course, is the number one guy, and I'm a huge fan of that. Contemporary of our generation, I'm a huge fan of Tom Stoppard. I think he's a genius. American playwrights, Eugene O'Neill, though the early stuff was no good, but I mean, he ended up writing possibly the best play of the 20th century, which was Long Day's Journey into Night.
Yeah.
It was just awesome. I think it's very important for writers to say they're writers, whether they've ever been produced or published or not, and it's important to say it. It's important to say it often, whether you believe it or not. The more you say it, the more you can believe it, but my definition of a writer is anyone who feels bad about not writing. Anyone who feels bad that they don't write or haven't written or aren't writing. If you feel bad about that, you are a writer. Whether you're writing or not is, you know, that's just what's going on in your life right now. You're writing or you're not. That doesn't mean you're a writer or you're not.
Do you believe there's such a thing as writer's block?
Well, I think to label writer's block as such is to do yourself harm. You know, my favorite quote about that is from my favorite poet, William Stafford. Someone said, and when you can't write, Stafford said, I lower my standards. So really, if you're blocked, it's really because you're letting your left brain criticize you too much. There's some version of this sucks or you're unworthy going on. And if you just write bad, write anything, don't worry about it, just write, it'll kick back in. You know, Hemingway said, don't be afraid, you have always written, you will write now. Just write one true sentence, write the truest sentence, you know. Because I think writers suffer more than they need to. Honestly, part of my mission with working with writers in Oregon is to alleviate some of the suffering and allow people to have their two brains work together. I teach screenwriting, and I teach how to write with the right and left brain alternately, as opposed to having both your high school football teams you know, your offense and defense on the field at the same time beating itself up. You know, it's good to judge sometimes, edit sometimes, and other times, don't. You know, let your right brain have a draft. Let your left brain polish it. Don't try and edit as you go. Don't try and judge as you go. I mean, there's really a time for just throw it down.
Would you show us where you write?
Yes. Come with me.
So this is where the geniusness takes place, right?
This is my desk, my toys, my videos, my books, my stuff.
And you work here every day?
No. I work here a lot, but I don't write every day.
Okay. That's one of the things I've been curious about, which got me into this, is the writer's regimen.
I believe that there's a cycle of creativity, and one-third of the cycle is stop. I really believe it's important to... The three parts are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. They go by the names of the Hindu gods. Brahma, lightning strike of inspiration. One-third of the recipe. One-third is Vishnu, which means I'm no longer inspired, but now I'm just doing the work. And the other third is Shiva, which means the destroyer. But when you finish a project, you have to stop and clear out. I call it clear the decks because destroyer is a little bit threatening. just stop, pause. Let the well fill up again. Wait for the next lightning strike of inspiration. And for me, I clean up my office and put away my research and throw away my rough drafts during that part and take care of other things like going to the dentist or whatever, getting a haircut.
One more question. You're sitting here with this computer. You've got, I noticed, an iPad downstairs, cell phones. We all have all this technology. How's this changing writing, in your opinion?
Well, I've lost my callus, you know.
Right, it's the lump on the finger.
Yeah, I used to have that. I now no longer have the, like, such a bad knot in one arm from it because I have terrible posture and the writing by hand all the time hunched over. I always had a perpetual knot.
Nice.
It's gotten a bit better, but honestly, that when I started out making my living at this, it was typewriters. It was before computers, and so to have to retype, I mean, I can remember story meetings at the point at which I realized I'm going to have to retype the entire thing. Yep. At one point,
yes.
My first boss, it was Tony Bill, who was wonderful. He could see my face was falling. He goes, "What's wrong?" I go, "I'm going to have to retype the entire thing." He goes, "Oh, get a typist. Don't worry." And I was like, "Oh, thank God. I don't mind rewriting, but when you have to retype everything, that's partly why I'm not a novelist, too, is because in those days, 250, 300-page novel, every draft you had to retype the entire book, so I would start to hate it.
Start to finish.
By the end of the year, I hated it because you have to retype every page and every mistake. You'd only have carbon. It was your original, and you'd have to send off your original, and it would come back dog-eared, and you had no good original. You couldn't reprint it because that was it.
Yeah.
Your carbon was crap. All the carbons were crap. And Xerox was terrible, and then it would start to turn brown. I mean, it's just really difficult in terms of that. I love now that you can move paragraphs. I always have a second document called Extra Pages. So whatever the title is,
right.
It'll say Chipping. And then it'll say Chipping Extra Pages. I just have another document. I cut all the things that I don't think I'm going to want. I put it in another document so in case I need something in there later, it's not gone. And it's not piling on my desk in terms of paper.
Okay, future of writing in America given cultural changes. I mean, here we're going with, you know, the YouTube phenomena and all of this growth in social media. Is it having a change on our writing and writing style that you know of?
Well, I think that writing will never die. It just changes form. It's been with us for, you know, well, when did cuneiform first come in? 100,000 years. I mean, it's been around forever.
Yeah.
It'll always be there. It'll change form, but you find some really wonderful writing in new places like blogs. People that are really good and clever, they get a following for their blog because they can write. People that have nothing to say or say the same thing every day, people aren't going to follow that. People that are interested in language, and many people are entertained and enchanted by that. Plus, we have really good novelists still. We have good screenwriters. We have good playwrights. We have really good writers all over the world. We have great writers. So I don't think writing's in any danger. I just think we have to... We don't know what's going to happen with paper books. That may change. It probably will. Someone told me as long as people give babies books and small children books, there will be people coming through that care about books. But we'll see.
Nice.
My children still read physical books.
Yeah.
They're in the 20s. So we'll see what happens. But writing will still be there. Writers will be safe. I think it's one of the few jobs that's completely bulletproof.
That's good. Any inspirational statement for future writers?
I think a lot of writers are concerned about can I make a living doing this. And I think that absolutely people can make a living as writers. And a lot of my students have done well, and people continue to break out. One of the guys in my critique group just broke out huge, and Spielberg is directing his movie. It's still happening plentifully. I mean, a living can be made. Just think positively and don't quit.
Nice.
Don't quit. Just keep going and keep working at it and keep believing that you can do it. And those people do. My sister Laura broke in at age 45 and has sold 5 books in the last 5 years. So it's happening. Cynthia Whitcomb. I'm a playwright, screenwriter, television writer, teacher of writing, and president of Willamette Writers in Oregon.
And you're awesome.
Thank you, babe.
Thank you for listening. This has been a presentation of The Author's Road, copyright 2011. This recording was made in July 2011 near Portland, Oregon.